Hey everybody, and welcome back to another exciting episode of the Wampa's Lair Journey to the Force Awakens. This is episode 4, and I am, as always, one of your hosts, Jason Hunt, and with me we have Carl Leclerc.
Oh, back for yet another episode of our journey.
Yes, the journey to the Force Awakens continues.
Just a few more days, Jason.
On the Wampa's Lair.
Just a few more days.
I wonder if the Wampa's Lair is going to get a shout out in The Force Awakens. I doubt it, but you never know.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love it, but I doubt it.
Yeah, me too.
What are we doing this episode?
This episode, we're going to finish our Larian inquiries. We got a couple left to bang out that we figured we'd, again, we want to empty that mailbag before the Force Awakens comes out. So we just have a couple quick questions to go over, and that'll be this episode.
Woohoo! All right. Our first one comes from Ian Statsny. I hope I pronounced that correctly. He says, "Hi, Carl and Jason. I discovered your podcast about 5 weeks ago after a retweet from Vanessa Marshall, a.k.a. Harrison Dula in Rebels." Wait, first of all, stop.
Yeah, I was trying to find what the hell that was from, too, because I was like, wait, did
we got retweeted?
Did we get retweeted by the voice actor from Rebels?
I missed this.
Me, too. I couldn't undercover this. So if you are listening, Ian, please explain that to us, because we want to feel really important.
Yes. If anybody noticed this, if you could like send us a link to that retweet, that would be incredibly awesome.
Yes, it would.
but he had a couple of Larian inquiries from The Empire Strikes Back.
Thank God. I'll do anything to talk Empire.
Of course you will. In The Empire Strikes Back, he goes on to point out that Obi-Wan tells Yoda that he was reckless at one point, saying that Luke said, he wouldn't train Luke because Luke was reckless, and Obi-Wan says, "So was I, if you remember." And his question is, really, Obi-Wan, reckless? Obi-Wan, we met in The Phantom Menace, is anything but reckless, straight as an arrow, by the book Jedi, who loosens up a little bit in later episodes, but doesn't qualify as reckless. And do we have anything that we know of that can justify that comment? Maybe something from his youth that he hasn't heard of, that we hasn't heard about. What do you think about...
Unfortunately, I don't have much to bring, because I'm not sure. I mean, I think he makes a great point. I don't think that there is anything, at least as far as the films go, that give evidence to Obi-Wan ever really being reckless. Luke is reckless there, especially on Dagobah, because he's just throwing himself into things. He wants everything right away. He wants this to be, he wants to get on this process. He wants to go fight the bad guys. You know, there's a recklessness to Luke. But we don't get that at all from Obi-Wan in episodes 1, 2, or 3.
I think there may be one instance in The Phantom Menace. Well, a couple, maybe. His whole thing about another pathetic life form he's just trying to get through going on. Although I'm not sure that would qualify as reckless, maybe just insensitive.
Yes, and impatient.
Yes, and impatient. Now, reckless, after Darth Maul stabs Qui-Gon, the way he goes after Darth Maul may be a little bit reckless, but I don't see that being a normal thing for Obi-Wan.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, it's to say that if he was also reckless wouldn't imply like a single action. It would imply that there was some sense of recklessness to him at some point in his life. It was part of his disposition. That is not part of the Obi-Wan Kenobi disposition that we meet in the prequels. So, I mean, my immediate comment is I think, again, it's just kind of stupid writing. George forgot to show that to us. And sadly kind of shows us the opposite of that. You know, we never see a reckless Obi-Wan. So I can't think of any evidence. Maybe there's something from young kid novels.
Yeah, young reader novels.
Yeah, that came out for like Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon. So I don't know much about those.
I read a bunch of those as a kid, and there was some reckless stuff in there, including one point where he decided he was going to leave the Order for a bit because he wanted to stay with this resistance group.
The resistance.
There was a resistance group on this planet, and he was feeling like he had a place there, and decided to leave the Order for a little bit. And then the next book, he came back, obviously, but or maybe the end of that book, I don't remember. And then, of course, who knows? Maybe he's also referring to his dalliance with Satine before he finally decided to remain a Jedi. While he was still a Padawan. Who knows? I mean, we see Obi-Wan at the end of his Padawaning days when he's basically a Jedi Knight. I would love to get stories of young Obi-Wan and find out if he really was as reckless as he seems to think he was.
Right.
But
yeah.
But we don't have anything in the current canon that backs that up.
Right, exactly. So. And I think that's true. We don't. So, but good question.
Yeah. And then his second point is from the moment when Han was frozen in carbonite, he brings up the point that Han's hands are cuffed in front of him when he goes down into the carbonite chamber, and then when he comes back up, Han's hands are reaching up towards the sky, and he's wondering why there's such a change like that, and if we had any thoughts. So
yeah, I think, you know, so they obviously remove the binders from his wrists right before he goes down. The Ugnaughts come up and take those off, but there's still the binder around his upper arms, if you notice.
Yes.
I think a lot of people don't notice that, which is why his arms are always pinned. They're still pinned to his side because he has this like binder on both of his arms that kind of wraps around his back, which I think it causes, you know, why his arms are still so close together. My way of making sense of why that's not there when he's unfrozen in Return of the Jedi is that maybe the carbonite disintegrated it. I don't know.
That's my theory as well.
Yeah. But yeah, I think, you know, I think Irvin Kershner talked about this, you know, when they first did the original mold, it was just going to be kind of Han with his hands at his side, like down. But, you know, Irvin Kershner's kind of point was like, this is Han Solo. Like, he's going to fight to the very last second. So maybe he's trying to, like, when he lowers down there, maybe he tries to grab onto something to, like, see if he can, like, hoist himself out. Who knows? Maybe, you know, it's a defensive pose. Like, there's something about to be sprayed in his face. Just, it's an instinctual movement of his hands to, like, kind of block something, but it freezes it before he can even get to his face. That's what I think is. I think he wouldn't, you know, Irvin didn't want it to look like he was just a solitary figure. Like accepting this, like a passive person, like, which I guess kind of makes sense. I mean, he is passive. There's not much he can do. Even if he gets out, they're just gonna throw him back down there anyway. But you know, I think it's, to me, maybe it's more of just like a reflex of something about to be sprayed on him. Right. So he just kind of puts his hands up in this kind of like defensive posture.
Yeah.
I mean, it
is one of those things where I do think, you know, it's one thing to go down and I'm not going to say that Han's a coward or anything, but it's better one thing to not go down and try and have that strong image as you face this. But then as it's happening, if it doesn't happen all at once, you know, it's like, oh my God, ah, and then he reaches for something, but it, you know, before he can actually do anything, he's completely frozen. You know, if it's one of those things where it like starts at the bottom and goes up, you know,
right,
that would be painful. And so it could be a reaction to that. I don't know. Unless it's all at once. I have no idea. I don't know how the carbon freezing chamber actually works like that. So, yeah. But anyway, yeah, that's that.
Yes.
Patrick also had a couple of questions. Did you want to read these or you want me to read these?
I'll read them.
Okay.
All right. Let's see. Patrick says, what are your thoughts on the whole Darth Jar Jar theory?
Have you seen this?
A little bit. I don't know. It's not worth my time. Sorry. And it's already been confirmed by Kathleen Kennedy and JJ that he's not in the movie.
Right. The whole idea, for those who are curious, is that Jar Jar is actually a brilliant evil genius and that he's actually working with Palpatine to create the clone army and create the Empire. Which, I'm sorry, no. There's no possible way, because Jar Jar is a character of innocence, and that's his role in these films, and George Lucas wouldn't do that. And oh my God, why are you trying to turn Jar Jar into a monster, folks?
Yeah. Well, and look, the first time we meet Jar Jar, he's wandering the swamps of Naboo, just kind of lost in his own world. He's an outcast. You know, there's no way he's plotting anything beneath that. He just, it's happenstance that he bumps into Qui-Gon.
Yes.
So, and everything just spirals from there.
Yes.
So I didn't mean to be super dismissive of that, Patrick. No. I just think it's, you know, I've heard
the theory
of it.
The theory is ridiculous.
Silly. Yeah.
The theory is ridiculous and it doesn't deserve the attention it's getting.
Yeah. So, well, anyway. And again, we also know that he's not in the movie.
Right.
So, but, and he says, have you both seen the Binks Awakening? I think that's just the trailer with Jar Jar in it. Isn't that right?
Yeah. Yes.
I thought it was funny. I got a kick out of it.
I love it. I think it's hysterical. Yeah. Obviously, it's one of those funny things that everybody's watching the trailer and everything, and then someone just decides, oh, let's put Jar Jar in every scene. And I'm just like, that's funny. Because the way that they do it actually sometimes makes sense, and other times it's just goofy, and I thought it was funny.
Right.
But yes, I've seen it.
And then he says, what do you guys think of Rebels so far? We talked about that in our two previous episodes ago. So hopefully we answered that question, and we're going to come back to that, obviously. But then he has this, I like this question. If you could create a scene in The Force Awakens, what would it be? Jason, you go first.
Ooh. I think the first thing I would want to do is some sort of, Luke training Jedi scene. To be perfectly honest, and it's hard to come up with this idea when we're so close to the movie and we've seen all the trailers and everything.
Yeah.
But I think thinking back to before we got all these trailers and all this information about the movies, I would have probably wanted to see some sort of training scene where Luke is, you know, the Grand Master and is training his Jedi apprentices and knights and everything and. That sort of thing, but that's, you know, that's always my bent with Star Wars is the Jedi. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's probably the scene I would create. What about you?
Yeah, something similar. I think again, it's tough now. I bet you he wrote this in a while ago. we're just getting to things very late. But you know, in light of what we have now, what we already know, and I've read a ton of spoilers, so it's hard for me to say what I want to see when I have a feeling I know what I'm going to see. Which I'm actually kind of kicking myself for now, but whatever. I'm going to continue to do it with episodes 8 and 9 too, so whatever. But I think like you though, Jason, I honestly, like, I still think I would love to see, I mean, obviously I love Han Solo, but I'd love to see Han go out in a blaze of glory. You know, and I'm not saying I know that Han dies. I don't know if Han dies for sure. Nobody does. Well, except for the actors. JJ. You know, I said, and we talked about this a long time ago when we first heard about the movie and we just had like, oh my gosh, what do we want to see type of an episode. Yeah. It always makes me think of the opening scene in the first Star Trek film JJ does. And I think he did such a great job of how Kirk's father died. And I think, and it happened so soon in the movie, yet I always find it very moving. So the fact that he can make you care about a character that quickly is great. So imagine what he could do with somebody like Han Solo, who's already got, you know, a huge fan base behind him, and he's got a great story already. I think it would be really great to see a scene where we see Han and Chewie and the Falcon going out in a blaze of glory, but to save somebody, whether it's Luke or Leia or their kids, something like that, that the next generation of heroes. I'd love to see Han and Chewie. I think it's really important that they go together. And even with the Falcon, where they just give their lives for the good of the wider Star Wars community, in a sense. I still think that would be awesome. I think it would give a lot of depth to the film. So,
yeah.
And that nobody's safe.
yeah.
So
cool. But,
yeah.
Patrick had one more question.
He did indeed. And he says, what do you think of Fox News bashing Star Wars? I think we kind of commented on this briefly in the past, but
yeah. It's one show that comes on at 1 a.m. and they make fun of news. That's the point of the show.
Right.
There's nothing really to it, in my opinion. It's just people trying to say something that will get a reaction out of people. And it did.
Right.
It got a bit of an overreaction, I think, because we've seen that the lady who said some of those comments ended up getting like threats from Star Wars fan, which is not appropriate, folks.
No, it's beneath us.
It is.
It's like Fox News is beneath us. But
hey,
sorry. To me, all news channels, they're always about bashing things anyway. Whether you're a liberal or a conservative, both sides tend to bash the other pretty religiously. So it's annoying to me. I mean, I don't like Fox News. That's the long and short of it. But I don't like a lot of news stations for that matter. But I don't think it's indicative of Fox News. I think it's just the only thing I actually appreciated about it is the fact that there are a lot of people out there that are saying, I don't get it. Why do people like Star Wars so much? And I don't think they're saying it as aggressively as was kind of projected on that particular episode. But, you know, that's a fair point. There's a lot of people out there who just don't get, you know, our crazy Star Wars fandom. They just don't understand it. And I think you know, to some degree, it's just all you got to say is, well, it's just not for you then. You know, that's what I say. Like when I show Star Wars films to somebody who's never really seen them before and they're like, it was okay. It's like, okay, it's just not for you. Like, you know, it speaks to so many people, millions of people. So mm-hmm. It obviously is something very primal to say and something very real for so many folks, but some people just don't get it. And I think that was kind of the point of it. And I thought it was interesting because it's like, okay, well, what do we love? Because I think as Star Wars fans, rather than getting upset at them for like, how dare you Fox News for saying that, just be like, well, what do you love it? What do you love about it? Just talk about that. Let that be your response to it. Be like, well, they don't get it. So here, let me try to help you get it. Here's why I love it. You know,
yeah.
Rather than getting all angry and upset, just, you know, say what you love about it. You know, that's all you can do because that's the question they're asking. Just answer their question. And if they're not satisfied with the answer, they're not satisfied. So
that's on them.
Yeah. So yeah, but that's fine. That's, you know, that's your typical news. You know, any news station could have done that today. So,
right.
Could have
right.
been CNN. It could have been, you know, anything. NBC Nightly News, whatever.
Or your local news channel, you know, any mm-hmm. from the big news to the local news. Exactly. It could have been anything.
Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter nope. at all. So all right. Anyway, well,
hey, Carl.
Yeah, but, hey, what, Jason?
We emptied our mailbag.
Oh, praise the Lord. Finally.
Yes. Yes. Oh, that's such a relief.
Yes.
All right. Well, that wraps up this episode of the Wampa's Lair Journey to the Force Awakens. This has been episode 4. And for Carl, I'm Jason. And we'll see you next time here in the Wampa's Lair.